Faith and Values in the News on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble. 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Leon Lagerstam deals with faith and values at the Argus Dispatch newspaper. We'll meet him today on Scribble.
Good to have you here today, Leon. I don't know how many readers you get in the faith and values section, but I can tell you that every Saturday my wife grabs that before any other section of the paper and takes a look at how faith and values are going in the Quad Cities. How long have you been doing the faith and values section of the Argus?
Well, I've worked for the newspaper since 1989.
Right.
So I got my start back then. I've been doing the faith and values beat for about 10 years now, about a decade.
Did you get assigned that, or is that something you wanted?
I had actually asked for that beat when it first became available.
Why?
Because I've been quite active in church, whatever, in the church goings-on and that kind of thing. And so it was seemed to be a very natural fit, and I've come to it very naturally. I've enjoyed that immensely.
You know, people talk about the organized religion, and in the major denominations, a steady decline in attendance. When you talk about faith and values, do you look at it primarily in the light of established religion, or do you go beyond that?
We've been going on beyond that for years. I've been covering all sorts of different topics and all different religions, and that's kind of why we decided to rename it, because it had been the religion section, but we decided then to rename it to the faith and values section. Originally I had actually wanted to go a step further. I originally had suggested that we would use the word beliefs page.
Uh-huh.
And just really open it up. However, I was outvoted on that term. They wanted the faith and values instead. So that's the rationale behind it.
Well, that gives you actually a pretty broad spectrum, because people can have values without having religion.
Right. Yep.
And I've often wondered how far you go in covering that.
Oh, we've actually done all things. I've interviewed among my favorite interviews was actually a church Scientologist way back about shortly after I started. That was
from the Quad Cities?
From Peoria.
Okay.
Was actually where he was from. And that was quite an interesting interview. I never would have expected half the answers I got that day, and I'll still remember that interview forever.
Mm-hmm. Do you seek out subjects, or are subjects suggested to you?
A little bit of both, but generally, a lot of them come in just from people I've met and people I've known who know that I'm doing that beat. Others I do pursue, and we do get a fair degree of that kind of news.
I've noticed you occasionally do, I won't call them biographies, but you do a piece on a particular person in religion, and then you can do other general topics. What is the mix? What are you looking for?
I've been basically looking for geography and trying to represent every Quad City representative that we have. And that's been predominantly, I've tried doing that mixture of different stories of the personality profiles and different stories.
What's the state of religion in the Quad Cities? What's happened to it in the years that you've been involved with it?
The mainstay, the churches that we generally would think about have all kind of gone down a little bit. Your attendance of Catholics and Lutherans and any of the other denominations that you talk about, a lot of them are generally on the downswing, mm-hmm. while your mega churches in the area are huge, have become even more appealing to the general public.
What was that term you used, meta churches?
Mega
churches. What denomination are they? Any denomination?
Depends on what church you're talking about, but like Heritage was a Wesleyan. Wesleyan had started that church way back when. Now it's only known as Heritage Church, and that's one of your bigger ones in town.
And are they still growing?
Yes, and the new pastor there is just a dynamite. He is terrific.
You know, we hear it came up when they had this disaster down in Houston that the Prosperity Church down there, Prosperity Gospel, had to be nudged into opening its quarters for. And then I got to thinking, well, what is a Prosperity Gospel? What has that got to do with any religion that I know of? Do we have any Prosperity Gospel churches here?
I don't believe that we have any that are named that. But we have so many different churches of so many different denominations. I'm sure there's something like it.
Is it dependent on the pastor as to what the church is?
Again, that all depends because different churches do it different ways. Your one church would probably, if it's led by a pastor, would generally then go by their whatever they want and whatever they believe in and whatever their beliefs are, and so it's varied. Your straight line denominations are a little bit more organized and planned, and they've been rather established.
It sounds almost as if the mega churches are built on personality or almost something like celebrity. The way people become famous today and have a following, that's not limited to movies and television. It's also religion as well.
Right. And when you look at some of the leading pastors, you know, your national telecast mm-hmm. ones, they are predominantly they draw people like crazy. Your Saddleback churches, your whatever. Mm-hmm. Those have just grown and grown and grown.
But that's really based on the personality of the preacher.
Right.
Didn't know it worked that way.
Well, it usually works that way. Like I said, the Heritage Church is kind of like a little bit different because they've had established ground rules. But then they've gone all sorts of different places, and they're definitely a world church.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think a lot of churches, you know, begin with personality. You certainly, Martin Luther was a colorful personality, and he used the press to his advantage. But it turns out when he turns out to have feet of clay here and there, it doesn't really bother it in the same way that if an Oral Roberts dies, or a Robert Schuller dies, the children have generally a pretty difficult time taking over. That doesn't happen in the in those churches, even though they were also based on personality at the beginning.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I forget who was the first one to claim it. There is a faith gene in our makeup.
E.O. Wilson, the ant guy, we're wired for religion.
That we want to believe, and it's not just believing in the Cubs or the Bears or anything, although that works as a belief system too, but we want to believe. We want to believe in something, and when we find something or someone we believe in, boy, we're anchored to that, and you can't break away from it. There's a major upset in your life to be able to break away from something that you put your belief into.
Mm-hmm. Now, you pretty much, you know, partly because of the Quad Cities makeup, cover Christian denominations, but you also cover Muslim and Buddhist. And
right.
Do you get any flack for that?
It kind of has changed over the years. It's evolved a lot. There used to be a time if I wrote a Jewish story, yes, I would take a fair degree of heat for
really?
Those. But in the last, in the last 5 years or so, you don't hear any complaints anymore when you're doing a Jewish story.
How about Muslim?
That's also virtually unheard of. I hardly ever get a complaint, but you do get, you do get occasionally.
Well, last spring, one of the television stations hired the first Muslim woman reporter in the United States.
Right.
Yeah.
And they got calls saying, "I'm never going to listen to Channel 4 again."
Yep.
How stupid can people be?
Well, I know, but I mean, yeah. So it's interesting that you aren't getting those.
No, we don't. In fact, well, Dr. Lisa Killinger, the Muslim representative over in the Davenport side, she was actually a convert to that.
I've talked to her.
Yeah, and she's and she is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's religion has always been a touchy subject. I know my dad used to say, in business, you don't talk politics or religion. And I said, well, those are the only interesting things to talk about. Why would you avoid them?
Right.
But it's because people put up fences, and they don't want you to penetrate that fence. I don't know. Yeah. It's I suppose, though, that when you put your faith in something, you really don't want even to hear anything contradictory. And that's too bad, because it makes use religion as a bludgeon then rather than as a means of living.
Right.
Leon, are there things you won't cover?
I can't think of anything because I've been, like I said, we've been extremely open to different
right.
topics. I've done Wiccan priests. I've done virtually anything right. and everything that we could perhaps cover. And like I said, with the Scientologist, that was one that was. I actually took some heat on that one, but that was from. I have one of my older kids who is a Lutheran pastor of a church in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, and when he found out that I was interviewing the Scientologist, he jumped all over me on that one. He had no idea what I was doing and what I was thinking. My God.
Well, it's true, that you become committed to something. You really, it can lead to as many problems as it can solutions.
Right.
But have you ever interviewed an atheist?
Yes, actually we have. Done that as well. I like to joke that I've done everything from agnostics, atheists, to Zen Buddhists, and everything in between.
Uh-huh. But a Wiccan priest, that's different. I didn't realize there was such a thing in such an office in the Quad Cities.
Right, and I know of that one as well because one of my oldest son is actually a Wiccan. And that's how I got introduced to it. So I was,
I would think you would never run out of subjects. How hard is it to fill the space?
It hasn't been that difficult. We'll put it that way. Generally, we can, I had been coming up with three stories a week. It could have easily been more.
Your column serves, your page serves as a guideline for submitting events that churches are having. What are the deadlines?
I have my deadlines now set at noon on Monday prior to a Saturday publication.
For any dates on right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you want anything published about the activities at your church or gathering, then it's noon Monday, is it?
Right.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind. I don't think I'm ready to start a church, though. I've often thought about that. I've often thought, what would it be like to start a church?
Oh, yep.
Set up a religion.
And do you go out and yourself cover church events with a photographer? I know that
I used to be able to. They recently changed my beats, and so I'm no longer on the full time Faith and Values beat. So I'm not doing as much as I had been because of that.
Right.
But how we used to do it is, yes, I would go out and I would cover, like I said, I had three stories a week that I was doing. And then I would assign the other ones. We have a main correspondent, Claudia Laux, who does a lot of our work. She's now doing more and more because of my conflict. So it's changing. It's evolving as we speak.
Do you see a contrast between faith and values?
The values part was originally supposed to represent the nonprofits. We picked nonprofit organizations as something I would start covering years ago, and that became the values part. The faith is self-explanatory.
Okay, so the value, they're not church related in any way.
Not,
these are just nonprofits that do all sorts of things that express our values, helping the homeless and so on.
Well, and the most recent story I did was the one on the resolution run by Christian Care, or Youth Hope, I'm sorry. But the Youth Hope of Resolution Run was the last story I actually put together.
On the faith side, do you regularly cover the mainline religions?
Only because that's lends itself more easily to coverage. But if I find out of another group, we cover them.
Mm-hmm. I know when I first started, I had spent 2 years in the seminary, and I had many friends who became priests. And it was normal in those days for Catholic parishes to have at least one assistant pastor, and sometimes two. I know because they'd all come over to my house on Saturday night, and we'd gather and talk and have a little party. But that's not the case anymore.
No, they've had quite a recruitment problem in any of the mainline denominations. Pastors are just not enrolling in seminary at any rate to be considered as successful.
Do you find that pastors are aging? Do you find more older pastors now than you did in the past?
Actually, it's been my experience that the pastors are actually a younger version, that are their churches are growing old, and that's been more common than ever seen.
A few more women than there used to be.
Yeah, right. and in fact, my church is currently shopping for a new pastor, and they've been drawing more and more females and other applicants.
And many of them second career.
Right. Most of them are second career, right.
That's interesting that the influx of women into religion, into positions of leadership, women have always been the backbone of churches. And the odd thing is that they were not in positions of leadership.
Correct.
But that is changing now.
Well, except for in the Catholic tradition, you're still not looking for any women in the Catholics.
If they want to survive, they're going to have to deal with that.
That would look quite favorable, yes.
Yeah, they don't dare talk about it, but anybody who's looked at it says it's either that or you just shrink.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I must say, do you get into controversial subjects?
Every once in a while, sure.
Uh-huh.
I'm just trying to think of some examples. I do know that, among the things, I've had a role, like about 5 years worth of number of first place award for stories I've done. I'm trying to think of any of those that were really controversial. The one was probably I did a story about how the Christian education of youth have changed, how the Sunday school programs that some of the main denominations used to have are down to a handful of kids. And that one did raise a little bit of fuss. Uh-huh. We also I did
it's
the one.
It's also true.
Well, yeah. Well, I know, but you don't want the truth. I mean, so anyway, you wind up ruffling a few feathers. Did the one story about a Davenport pastor who was packing weapons. He was known for carrying a gun, mm-hmm. including in the pulpit.
I wondered what the response. I read that one.
Yeah, and the only response I remember getting from that was one reader was quite appalled by the use of the art, because we had a Bible and a gun on top of that Bible.
Yeah,
and I still remember hearing a lot of complaints on that one.
Yeah, guns and the Bible don't go together. I don't care what people say. If you read the one, you're not going to use the other.
Right. Well, I had done a story. There were several pastors that admitted that they carry.
Hmm.
And that was a little bit.
I'm more appalled than I am amazed. Oh, my. Well, you uncovered something for me today that I didn't know.
You got to read this section more often.
Okay. Well, that's it. The Faith and Values section, Leon Lagerstam is the man who helps put that together. And I thank you for your work in that field, because that's an important issue to cover. And especially I thank you for joining us today, Leon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, I must say, Faith and Values, have you examined yours lately?
I'm examining it all the time. I mean,
that's a tricky subject. That's a tricky subject.
I've been discussing, among others, with my friend Treadway, the former president of Augustana, about, you know, whether there's something else, we call it now, and mm-hmm. or whether this is what there is. And I just finished reading a book on quantum physics, and this is not what it really is either, it turns out. I mean, the world is to me just getting stranger and more unapproachable
than ever.
I thought I knew it all when I was 21.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing that, as I've become tiresome about it, Mike, the thing that stops me cold is we have no idea what life is. We talk about life all the time.
We don't even know what matter is, Don.
No, that's true. But, I mean, the business we talk about, you know, how to live your life and so on, and I think, well, yeah, but what is it? What exactly is this force that moves through matter and brings it alive?
If there is matter.
Yeah, and then it keeps evolving. It just won't stop evolving. And the only thing life seems to be interested in is reproducing itself. It doesn't care what we do. Life itself
just with variations, right?
Yeah.
The one thing that's guaranteed is that our kids are not going to be duplicates of us.
No, that's right. It's a constant variation and filling every niche on the earth. Life is everywhere, deepest part of the ocean, up in the sky, cold, hot. Life is somewhere, everywhere.
My guess is it's all an experiment. Don't you think?
I have no idea.
You know, I can imagine somebody saying, you know, looking down at you and Bernadette and saying, what if I put these genes with these? What do you think is going to watch this, kids? This is going to be really good.
Oh, yeah, but that happens. Something like that happens for every human coupling, and also all animals all the way down to the bacterial level, the same forces at work everywhere,
right.
And we don't know what it is. We call it, some people call it the will of God, some will say it's, I don't know.
Emerson called it the oversoul.
Yeah, we just don't know what it is. And as you get near the end of life, and certainly approaching 90, I'm edging up there.
Right.
And you think, I wanted to know, I set out wanting to know everything. Now I'd just like to know one thing. What is life? What is it? I've seen it described. I've seen it portrayed in painting, characterized in music, in theater, in people's lives, in the broad stretch of nature. But what is it? And that is the question that stops all conversations, because no one has an answer.
Well, the answer is, in the book I've been reading on quantum physics, pretty nearly nothing, right? One of the illustrations in that book is, if you took an atom and you expanded it to the point where the atom was as big as a speck of dust, the center, mm-hmm. the nucleus.
Yeah.
The electron rings that surround the atom would fill St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York.
Yeah.
Which is to say, mainly nothing, which is why, you know, stuff can go through us from outer space without our bodies ever detecting it, because we're mostly nothing.
Well, look at this solid table at which we sit. It's mostly nothing.
It's mostly nothing.
And yet, it's as solid as anything in the world. And you know, no matter how you approach it, no matter how you look at life or the planet, Carl Sagan says, if the universe exists for us, it's a terrible waste of space.
Right.
Why all that? You know, and how do we fit into that? There's something abroad in creation, in the universe. This mysterious force called life.
Do you think you'd be happier if you knew?
Well, why is it that I want to know?
Wanting to know is in some maybe better than knowing, right?
You bet it's annoying. Wanting to know answers to unanswerable questions.
Isaac Asimov in the late 1960s had an essay in which he predicted a new dark age coming, because we're reaching the point where we'll know everything about everything. Huh. We'll get to the edge of the universe, and then there will be no more curiosity because we'll know, right? Well, he was a little premature.
I think so.
But he's right.
Well, you'll never kill curiosity. I mean,
if you knew it all, you would.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The educational system exists to kill curiosity. The kids start out as curious as they can possibly be. And it's that curiosity that is the hallmark of human beings, really. We've blown another time here. I'm Don Moot with Roll Tweet. This is Scribble. And we'll get back to books and authors again next week, and hope you'll join us on the next edition of Scribble.